चालू घुसेगा उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Hi, this is episode 65 of Attention Plus with Arnab Ray right here on Talking Stuff Network, and I'm Vikram Mohan. We are recording this on 8th of December 2019, India time. And before we begin, I would like to thank our network sponsor, Sleep Spa from CoirFit. And these guys have decades of experiences in mattresses, and they are so confident that their mattresses are so kick-ass, and their huge wide range of products that they offer 11-year warranty. And this really gets me every time. They offer a 100 nights trial, so you can try it out, and they're so confident about their product. So this Christmas, why don't you gift yourself or a loved one in India great sleep and relief from backaches and all in the new year. So order a mattress online from sleepspa.in, and you can use the coupon code TALKINGSTUFF15 and get 15% off, which should add the sweet dreams to your good night. We thank Sleep Spa for their support. And now back to the podcast. Last week, we had probably one of our most fun-filled episodes and a lot of love for it. But I'm afraid we must get back to life, and which is a little bit more dreary, unfortunately, at the current moment, and discuss what's happening around us. And to do this, of course, we have your host, Arnab Ray. Hey, Arnab.
Hello.
Arnab,
hello everyone.
This is going to be one of those topics that ideally shouldn't exist to be discussed. No.
Yes. But before we get into those of you who are following me on Twitter today. So today I took my daughter to her first competitive inter-school event, and it brought back so many memories for myself. You know, because I've kind of grown up when I was growing up in Canada. We used to do speeches. And there's a lot of stories, maybe for another day, but just sitting there waiting for results from one round just reminded me of my quiz days, except that now I'm doing it for my daughter. So it's kind of felt that the circle has kind of come full circle. I don't compete in anything anymore, unfortunately, but being a dad, you felt even more nervous because you were nervous for many things. And the thing that you're really nervous about is the reaction of your daughter. That is what you're really nervous about. How will she react to it? That's really something which I never used to think of competitions in this way, because it was always very personal. But I guess being a dad kind of changes everything. So she did fairly well. She came fifth basically an inter-school competition with several schools in the local Los Angeles area, and pretty much she's 6 years old, and this was open up to people from grade five. So most of the people kids she were competing with were like years older than her. So at this age,
very proud.
Six and nine is huge, the difference between a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old. So I was fairly happy the way she did. And so the topic that I wanted to talk about essentially today was something which I think all of us now, with what happened in Hyderabad, with what happened in Unnao. And, it's very distressing. It's distressing both as concerned Indians as well as, having kids, having daughters in at least in our case. So we can kind of feel it, and I understand that this is a very emotional topic, and for people who reach a certain age where they become fathers, and it's very difficult to just see this as yet another crime. I mean, it hits home, and you realize I don't need to say what it the fear that all of us have. And it's very tempting to, and I've seen the debates on television and the kind of the watering down of the issue. The problem that we see, that I'll just get to the chase here, is that whenever something like this happens, the predominant public sentiment is lynch the bastards. And this is very natural, and it's not that it's not something which I don't also think of. Whenever I read headlines, 4-year-old girl, who's lying on the street, raped by, you know, you, the first instinct is, yeah, exactly. You know, publicly flog that bastard to death. I mean, there's no other way. This guy does not, just forget human, forget animal. There's no label that I can assign to this guy. And maybe, but then I realized that that's, while it's kind of cathartic to say it, it's just not the way the world works. And the problem that we have in India right now is not because the punishments are not harsh enough. The people who decided to commit that act of rape and murder, it wasn't that they were thinking, oh, we were going to get away with it. I mean, they were actually thinking we were going to get away with it. It was not really the quantum of punishment that affected their decision-making process that day. So harsher penalties, you know, things like public flogging, or, you know, people share videos of barbaric practices in the Middle East and say, you know, this is exactly what we should do. No, this is not exactly what we should do. We shouldn't do this at all. Because, you know, this does not solve any problem. This aggravates the problem. And it aggravates the problem because the essential problem is one of the disparity of power. The crime that happens is because of a disparity of power. It's a disparity of power between a number of men and a woman who doesn't have any help. That is the disparity of power. And disparity of power can be turned around. You know, you can take those four men and then keep them in front of a police force with arms. And even though the perpetrators now become the victims because the equation of power has turned around, and many people think, well, that is the justice. The justice is that you should feel exactly the way you made your victim feel. And while there's an argument to that, I wouldn't dismiss that offhand. But, you know, it's and the argument isn't that an eye for an eye makes the world blind. That's, you know, sounds good, but unfortunately that's not the way things work. Is that none of this will solve the essential problem. The essential problem is not that there is a lack of process. The problem isn't that the laws are not strict. It is just that the laws are not applied. It is that the system fails. The system fails, in this case, women, repeatedly in India. No matter how evolved we think we are, and of course, things have become, people are much more sensitized since 2012. It is something which really changed the country, but apparently it's not enough. And, you know, it's the rot is so deep, maybe, that, you know, that there's really, you know, things might get a little bit better, but not significantly, as we see. And so for me, as the Hyderabad police are lauded for essentially doing an encounter which is so transparent, you know, that you take the four guys out at 3 a.m. to the scene of the crime. I mean, let's call it for what it is. The fact that they're being lionized for this, that the fact that I saw a video of women tying rakhis around their head, you know, the whole thing is, you know, should they have been shot to death? So the short answer is no, they should have, at least for me, my opinion is they should have had a trial. The guilt should have been established, and then they should have been shot to death. There's a difference. I do believe in the death penalty, and I'm going to come to it. So I'm not saying that they should be allowed to live. I'm just saying that's not the way. Because that way, you basically perpetrate the asymmetry of power. I mean, that the essence of justice is to equalize that. So that's unjust.
Yeah, on Twitter also, you mentioned that the process works, but the system doesn't. Now, that's something which I'm not able to clearly understand. What do you mean by the system in this case? And what part of it is the process? I mean, the process is of course, the judicial process, the law and order, but when is the law. System?
The process is the law.
Okay.
The process is, so there's a process for all software guys. We know there's a process and there's the execution, right?
Ah, okay.
So it's the execution which is faulty. So the process, so just saying, hey, they're being hung by their necks, let's flog them to death. Okay, let's bring them out on the streets and let's, you know, take them apart limb by limb. You see, this is changing the process, right? And this is, there is an expectation that making punishments barbaric will automatically dissuade people from committing them. And that's a false argument. Because it doesn't.
No,
it never does.
The thing is, this has also happened in the backdrop of the other case, right? The Unnao tragedy. So that's also lending argument.
Yes. So again, these are all systemic failures. These are all systemic failures. Okay. The fact is that, so what is a systemic failure in Unnao? It's not that there's nothing wrong with the law.
is the fact that those guys shouldn't have been given bail in the first place. And they were given bail. And the reason, it's not just a question of given bail, that they could commit this crime with impunity, that a truck tried to kill them before that. That the fact that it's been going on is because the Unnai perpetrators have political patronage. That's the reason. You know, you can write whatever laws you want. It won't solve the problem. The problem there is that the perpetrators of Unnao have massive political patronage in that community that they stay in. That they are deemed to be, by virtue of their political position, either through fear or even worse, through empathy. That many people feel that they are either innocent or, as people like to say, these things happen, right? So that is the problem. It's not a process. You can say it's a problem of mindset. Yes, definitely. It's a problem of the system, but it's not a problem of the process. It's not that, you know, giving cops a license to kill or, you know, having public executions is going to solve it. It just doesn't. The reason why the Hyderabad case happened and the reason why Unnao happened wasn't that they were thinking that, oh, I will get a death sentence or I won't get a death sentence or I will have death sentence, but it will be a merciful death. So that thought doesn't enter anybody's mind. The only thing they know is that they won't get caught. That is the main thing. I doubt that the Hyderabad perpetrators, this was their first such act. I doubt that to be the case. So the fact is that these people live through the fact that they don't get caught. I don't believe that these people get caught the first time they do it. No, they don't. They don't. That is the real scary thing. They don't get caught the first time they do it. They're pretty sure there are many such incidents that have happened. So the problem again is not the process. The problem is that it's the system. For instance, you know, cases move slowly. Why do they move slowly? Because our courts prioritize, you know, opening the court at midnight to listen to, you know, some intellectuals being caught as, you know, being accused of Naxalism. That automatically gets higher precedence than the countless number of murders and rapes that have been lying there for decades. See, the problem again is not the process. The problem is the fact that, you know, that the high and the mighty choose not to prioritize this. That they have other things that they believe are more important. And so the change has to be systemic. What I'm advocating is a much deeper change. I mean, we all talk about, you know, changing people's mindsets and those, that's okay, that's there. But the problem is that the system of this country is that the fact is that most people know that cops, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, look at the whole Hyderabad thing. You know, the cops are the heroes now. But what is being buried, and that is exactly why the cops did what they did, was the fact that when the thing was going on, they argued over jurisdiction and they said that the girl had run away.
Absolutely.
That is the scandal. That is not a process failure. That is a system failure. That is a failure in execution of the process. The process says that you have to register an FIR. It doesn't matter on such a case like this. Jurisdiction doesn't matter. And yet we saw that it did. We saw that the cop said that, you know, she has run away. This was a time when they could have actually saved her life. And maybe even shot those guys while they were at it. But they could have saved her life if that was what they wanted to do. This whole thing of shooting them is basically an eyewash. It's a PR stunt for the criminal act of negligence almost that the cops did in this case. And this is, again, you have to understand, this is not some cop in some backwaters. This is like a cop in one of India's most prominent and wealthy cities. And they, who definitely should know better, who have the best of equipment. You know, sometimes you say, oh, this guy is in the backwaters of Bihar. He has, like, what is he going to do? He has to stay in that community. And we understand all of that, right? It's very easy to, you know, sit in a city or, in my case, sit outside the country and say, you know, this is the way things should happen. I know that things don't happen like that. But they're in Hyderabad, okay? They're in Hyderabad crying out loud. And for me, this is the biggest thing. It's the behavior of the police. And all of us know this is not a one-off situation. This is exactly the way they behave on everything. So and many of us who have interacted with the police have encountered this in multiple situations that police will argue about jurisdiction. They will not take things while the crime is going on. So this, I believe, is a systemic failure. It's a failure of the execution of the process. The process exists. They're supposed to register an FIR. They're definitely not supposed to tell, you know, the people who are asking for help that your daughter has run away. That, I'm pretty sure that's not the process. So you can say, oh, let's change the process and what, right? Don't say this to the victim's family. No, I mean, of course not. I mean, everybody knows you're not supposed to say that. So the problem is one of mindset, and the problem is that the police know that they can do whatever they want and get away with it. And they have done so in this case also. Even in the court of public opinion, they've gotten away. The original act has now been forgotten. The fact, and again, as I said, this is not unheard of. People who have interacted with police in India know that this is a very standard tact that they always take. You know, if a missing person thing, if whenever it's a woman, they'll say she's possibly run away. You know, I remember when we were growing up, this was a standard thing that, you know, police would say she's gone to Bombay. Okay, so you know that. Again, I just don't think this is a process problem. Now, I want to come to the more controversial thing. That's, you know, why I support death penalty.
Before that, I mean, I have one more question to ask you here. So now let's forget what should be. You know, again, I'm let me make it clear to the viewers that I'm more or less, I think I'm on board with what Arnab said, that you know, I believe in the due process. I think it what happened should not have happened. But in just in the interest of playing the devil's advocate, if we forget, let's say, what should be, this is how the process should be, but and taking into account what is, which is that there is, like you said, the systemic failure. So if you juxtapose this case with what happened in Unnao, the aam aadmi, so to speak, says that, listen, that lady there, she trusted the law and look what happened. I agree that we need to fix everything. But till all that happens, mob justice is the only way. What can we do?
But what mob justice will, I mean, think of Unnao, who is the mob? Is that guy the mob? So, you know, the thing about mob justice is that mob justice works the way the mob wants it to work.
Right.
In Unnao, that was mob justice that you just saw, except that the guy was in jail and he was orchestrating this continuously. You know, you had the truck, that unlicensed truck, which just kind of came out of nowhere and to try to kill their family once. And so it's obviously, this is not something which was, oh my God, I never saw that happening. So these guys are the mob in this case. You are seeing mob. This is the mob justice.
Surprisingly, many other people who rightfully were shocked and protested the lynchings which happened earlier, this time they were in support of the police action here.
Yes.
Which I just didn't find find it consistent.
So again, for me, it's very... So for me, we have to have certain fundamental axioms. Because if you don't have those fundamental axioms, if you say that, lynching is okay in some cases, like, then you're saying, okay, then by that logic, then stone pelting is fine. Terrorism is also fine. Because they can also say that, you know, I have disparity of power. I don't know what I'm going to do. Because that's really what the logic that's given. So we have to draw the line and say, no, okay, bad stuff happens. But that doesn't mean that the law can be short-circuited, because it's not really a problem with the law. That is the important thing. I mean, sometimes there is problems with the laws and they're fixed. But none of this over here was a problem with the law per se. And so when people say change the law, they're basically, it's just some kind of simplistic bloodlust that, you know, if that somehow if you raise the stakes and if we take the power. So it's again, the disease remains. But rather, if we can invert, that somehow justice will be served. And it doesn't. It never does. It's never happened in the history of the world. And I don't think it will happen here also. So due process is important. It is the only thing. And then I'm going to come to that when I'm talking about death penalty. As to why I support the death penalty. Because for me, again, hear me out on this. So for me, the way I look at it, again, it's a very personal, very controversial opinion, but there's a certain crimes like rape or murder, which is a crime against a particular person. It's not a crime against the state. That's tax fraud. Okay. That's a crime against the state. That's a crime against everyone. Okay. So there's a very specific thing about the personal nature of the crime that a murder or rape is that it is a crime against a person. That person is usually not there anymore, especially, by definition, in a murder. And so the purpose of justice that is my opinion again, is that it is not to improve or to make the criminal better. It is not to rescue the criminal or find good in him. When you cross that line, for me at least, honestly, I don't care. You do not exist as a human being. What is an animal? Because animals don't do this. To me, any longer. And to the country as such. So at that point of time, the principal focus of justice, in this case, which is administered by the government, is what does the victim want? And in the absence of the victim, what does the victim's loved one want? That is the main thing. Now, if the victim's loved person says, look, I forgive that person. I don't want him to die. I think it's fine at this point of time. But if the victim, and by I mean, again, the representative of the victim, that person, I believe, gets to choose the punishment and death. And people will say, you're talking very close to tribal law. And I am, because that's exactly the way tribes are formed. This is the way the basic human psychology works. Now, where I differ from tribal law is that the state exists as a mediator between the victim and the perpetrator. And again, when I say victim, I mean the representative of the victim. If the victim, again, slash representative of the victim, wants that the person be publicly drawn and quartered or burning oil be poured on them, then the state has to mediate and say, no, that is an inhuman form of punishment. So we cannot do that. Even if it makes you happy or even if it gives you some sort of closure, that is not something which we can do. What we can do is the death sentence. That is a death sentence administered humanely as per the laws of our land. Okay. Now, again, this logic is important because death penalty is not meant to be a deterrent. And one of the main argument they have given against death penalties, people will show data that countries which have death penalty, it does not reduce crime. This is not the purpose. Again, this is a false argument. The purpose of the death penalty is not to be a deterrent. When people go to commit murder or rape, they're not thinking, oh, well, this place has death penalty. This place I'll have life. I'm possibly not going to do it. No, it just doesn't enter into their head. It's either a crime of it's either something which happens instantly or it's a premeditated crime which happens because they believe that the odds are in their favor. That is the reason why it's a calculated, and that's most of the time it is. It's a calculated move because they think that society and the law as it exists in its practice, again, the system, not necessarily the law itself, but the way the law is practiced, it's in their favor. So the odds of them getting away are much higher. So they believe that they can go and do it. It's a risk they take, but they feel that the numbers are in their favor. This has got nothing to do. And so again, it comes back to the fact that it's a false argument to show that death penalty does not act as a deterrent. It's not meant to act as a deterrent. It is meant to give the victim, again, should they choose, that little solace that the person who did this to them does not live either. Like, for instance, I see that TV series about serial killers was Mindhunter. So I sometimes wonder that we are looking at. So have you seen Mindhunter, Victor?
No. I think it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yes. So it's a very, very good. But what Mindhunter never gets into, because it's not part of Mindhunter's scope, I would say, is that they're profiling actual real-life serial killers who are alive because they happen to commit their crime in a place where there is no death penalty in a state in the U.S. So one of the things that I find, it's of course a part of the charm of the series, is that it kind of humanizes those serial killers. So it shows that some of the serial killers are really bad. Some of the serial killers, they're very nice people otherwise. They're very nice, kind, funny. But yeah, they murdered 15 women. And for me, of course, I understand it as it's kind of a bizarre schizophrenia almost. I get the entertainment value of that. But I also think, what about the families of those 15 victims? How do they feel? How do they feel? How does the father or mother of whose daughter who he killed, how do they feel that nobody knows the name of their daughter and the person who killed her is a hero, essentially, here? Not a hero per se, but kind of like a magnetic villain. But again, everybody remembers his name. He's the guy who gets profiled in LA Times because he apparently did a lot of the voiceover readings for audiobooks. So there was an article in LA Times many years ago that this audiobook you're reading has possibly been read to you by a serial killer.
Oh, man.
Because he basically specialized, because he was very good at it. He's an extremely high IQ, intelligent person. And so, but for me, that doesn't matter. His personhood should not be, I mean, we should not see him as a person at all. He's not a person. It doesn't matter whether he's a high IQ, he's a nice guy, he's easy to talk to, he's funny. These things do not matter. And again, he didn't kill anybody from my family. I think that most of the people who appreciate Mindhunter, including me, is because of that. But I want to know what is the 15 women that he killed. I think 15. You know, what do their what does their family say when they see this? I mean, how does it make them feel? I don't think it makes them feel good at all. I wouldn't if I was in their place. See, that is the reason why you have death penalty. Because when you let a person live, see that there is, even if it's in a prison, even if it is for life, there is a hope. He gets, or he, I'm going to use the word he here, but he gets the exact same odds of making it through the day as anybody else. And that's not fair. The main thing about death penalty is not the death itself. I mean, we all of us die. It's knowing when you will die. That is the penalty. It's not the act of death itself. Everybody knows they're going to die. And many people who, you know, commit crimes like this might not actually be afraid of dying in that way. But they're pretty much afraid of knowing when they're going to die. That is the punishment. So again, people sometimes get the what the punishment is wrong. The punishment isn't so much death. Death is, in a way, they get a much more merciful death than they gave to their victims. But the fact is that their punishment really is knowing that time when they are going to die, you know, taking that last meal, you know, reading that last book. That is, that lack of hope is really the punishment. A person who has a life sentence per se always has that hope. He might not ever make it out, but he has a hope that there will be another dinner tomorrow, there'll be another breakfast tomorrow. And again, I know that life is not easy, but that's nothing compared to what they should get, in my opinion. And for me, the most important thing is the victim and the family of the victim. And if they believe that if they don't want to see the murderer of their daughter becoming a celebrity on Netflix, essentially, you know, that for me is of primary importance. I think they become more important. I think that is the reason why you have death penalty. That for me is justice. The other argument that I've often seen against death penalty is that people point to the number of death sentences that have been given to wrong people. And the main thing is it's the proportion of poor and marginalized people who get death sentences because they cannot afford proper representation. Again, for me, that's an argument for better policing. That's an argument for better system. It's not necessarily an argument against the death sentence. And yes, I get the point that a death sentence cannot be reversed. But if the problem exists, throwing an innocent person in jail for life isn't a great solution either. So the problem isn't really with the death or the life. The problem is, it's a good point. But the problem is that, you know, what can we do as a society to make sure that those who are poor get the proper legal representation, that they understand the magnitude? And this has happened many times when police, and I mean, let's not be Boy Scouts here, but many times people just pick up, police have picked up people and just thrashed them to an inch of their lives and make them confess because they're under pressure to get a confession. And normally the people who are dragged on the street and thrashed are the most marginalized. What was the name of that Tamil movie? Do you remember? This was an amazing Tamil movie I saw. It was a Tamil movie. It was about these migrant laborers who get picked up by the police and are thrashed.
Yes. Interrogation. Yes. In English.
It was amazing.
Visaranai.
Because there was some other crime that they want to do. So there's like basically setting up the patsy beforehand. So that, again, it's real. But again, this is a situation which is this is tragedy. This is something which needs to be fixed. But it's orthogonal to whether we should have a death sentence or not. It doesn't really matter. There's nobody dying away. Nobody, but you know, the fact that this man is being thrashed, this man is being tortured, this man is being deprived a chance of a livelihood for no good reason. He has no reason. He doesn't even know why he's in this is a totally different problem. Now, which brings me to the final thing, is that if you do not have the death penalty, you will inevitably make people take the law into their own hands. Because again, come back to the victim. It's not normal person, but it's a person who's lost everything. You see, if you're a father of a child who's been murdered or raped, at that point of time, you're dead yourself, right? Almost. What could possibly happen to you at this point of time? I mean, what do you think is preventing you from going and killing the person who did this to you? Nothing. At that point of time, you've lost everything. I mean, really, the reason why we don't commit crimes is we have stuff to lose. That's the reason. That person has nothing to lose at that point of time. That's why, you know, in order for him to not to torture that guy or, you know, pour him into boiling oil, that's why you have a death penalty, so that the government can come in and do the punishment in a way that's humane. You cannot let a person, you know, arbitrarily decide based on his anger, which is justified, but doing something terrible to the other guy, which is gratuitous, is not going to solve the problem. And that's just, it might solve the problem for the victim's person, victim's family. He might feel that justice has been served, but this is the place where the state has to interfere and say, no, that you cannot do to him. Now, again, the counter to that is, you know, why not in Sweden? You know, in Sweden, there is no death penalty. You know, don't have people going up and going John Wick on people. Why doesn't it happen in Sweden? Because, dude, the law prevents it. That's coming back to the first problem. In India, it's the system. When I say law, I mean the system that prevents it. You know, Sweden doesn't have as much people as we do. Okay, they have more money than we do. So the law is strong enough to prevent the victim's family from going and doing something bad to the perpetrator. In India, we see that it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. So there is a high chance, and this is exactly what happens. You know, the justification that is coming for the, you know, the extrajudicial killing is precisely that. That the law doesn't work. This is exactly what should happen. Now imagine if we didn't have a death penalty also. Imagine how much more convincing this argument would be that, you know, these guys would live. You know, these guys, they will live on our, you know, taxpayers' money for the rest of their life. That's why you have the death sentence. And so I'm not saying the death sentence would prevent it. It definitely didn't prevent this. But it will make things worse. It will make more people A, either take the law into their own hands, or B, justify taking the law into their own hands. And, you know, when Asha Devi, you know, the mother of Jyoti Singh Pandey, you know, she comes on television, and I see a lot of, you know, people criticizing her on social media. I just can't get why. I mean, why should you criticize her of all people? I mean, come on, hasn't that person gone through enough? I mean, it's very important for her voice to be heard. She represents the voice of the victim. It's something which I don't wish on my worst enemy, for him or her to go through what she has gone through. But what comes out, you know, when she's talking about Hyderabad, you know, she's seeing her daughter again in that. And so, you know, when she comes on television, I think it's very important that we hear her voice. You know, you may not agree with what she's saying, and I don't agree with what she's saying, but I also feel that it's not in, I mean, I shouldn't even be saying that I don't agree, because she and my experiences are not, I hope that it's never be the same. But, you know, I understand where she's coming from. She lives in a universe that I cannot even begin to conceive of. And most of us cannot even conceive of. So it's important that we let her speak. If it provides her with any kind of closure, I think we as a country owe it to her and owe it to families of all victims, that they be allowed a chance to be heard. And I think she represents a very, very vital voice in this whole situation, because we get to hear all the voices of these other people who say no death penalty, blah, 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 blah. But it's very important for us. And they're always legitimized because they're lawyers and, you know, they're all like intelligentsia. But this is another person who has actually lived that. She is the mother she is the victim in this case. Her family is the victim. And she's saying, no, I want the death penalty. I think these guys did the right thing. And again, I don't agree and I do not justify, as I said in my tweets, right, that this is a very fine line. That I do not justify extrajudicial action, but I do justify judicial death penalty. And it's very important for you to have that middle path, or you will have more things like this, that you know people get shot without due process. And people say, who cares about due process? You do care about due process. You have to find out in a court of law whether those were the actual four guys who did it. Now, it's highly possible that they are the actual four guys. I'm not going to say that they weren't. Possibly there are, but that's the thing about the system. They deserve their day in court. No matter what subhuman species that they may be, that is only if they are guilty. So that's the reason the law exists. And yes, you will not have law being administered in 5 days. Yes, due process does take time. However, it's not 7 years. 7 years also is not a reasonable time for that. We all know that there's a reasonable time. It's not 5 days, but it's also not more than 6 months in something like this. So again, do not fall prey to the argument given where you take something to the extreme and say, well, what about this then? No, there is, again, this comes back to my first point, is that it's the system that is wrong. It is the system which prioritizes other things over something as important as this. It is a system. And again, it is, for me, that's why it's not increasing the severity of the law. I think we have, after 2012, made a lot of changes to the laws. And I think all of them are pretty much, you know, good. I'm not saying that the law doesn't need to be changed. But I just feel that, and especially the law that people really want changed, is make the punishment harsher. Okay, give public flogging. You know, look at how they do it. That is absolutely not the solution. You cannot point to Saudi Arabia and say that is where we want to be. No, that is not where we want to be. So that's it for today. Do you have any questions, Vikram?
No, I mean, I did for the first part, but I think with as far as this is concerned, I'm more or less on board. I had tweeted this, small clip from one of my favorite movies by Wes Anderson, called Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. So it's one of those, I don't know. Do you watch Wes Anderson movies?
No, I don't, actually.
Okay. Yeah, you might like it. I don't know. I have a feeling you might. So he's got very dry humor. So in the beginning of it, this is, who was that guy in our childhood? We had this French guy who used to go under the ocean and... Jack Cousteau, right. So, it's modeled on a Jack Cousteau kind of character. So, he and his partner, they go and they get eaten by a new kind. I mean, his partner gets eaten by a new kind of, let's just say a fish, which he calls jaguar shark. A totally beautiful one. And so, then he mounts an expedition and he says, so there's a big auditorium where he's like a celebrity. So he says, okay, you know what, we have discovered a new fish called the jaguar shark. And there's a lot of people asking questions, like a press conference. And somebody asks, okay, what's the purpose of your expedition? He says, we are going to mount an expedition to go down under the ocean, find the jaguar shark and kill it. Then this guy's like shocked. He says, what scientific purpose would that solve? And he just says, revenge. So I just totally loved that
bit. Do you support the death penalty?
I do. Only because, for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think we have enough resources to take care of the deserved living. I don't want to waste resources on somebody who... it doesn't matter whether they live or die.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. I mean, I'm totally for redeeming certain kinds of criminals, but there's some people who, just by the nature of the crime, it's just, this person is just not redeemable. So,
and
for me, it's
chance
it's
that
not
they get
about
to spread
redeeming.
Their DNA.
No, it's not a question of if they're in prison, they might not get to spread their DNA. But it doesn't really matter. The fact is that there are places from which no person, they might come back, they might find God, but you don't right. get that chance. The main thing is that some crimes are so extreme that, you know, we always say everybody deserves a second chance, but that's everybody. You're no longer a body at that point of time. You don't deserve a second chance. That is the punishment. You know, everybody else might deserve a second chance. Yes. You know, they might, you know, find forgiveness. They might find, but you, you know, in this case, these people, or, you know, we know who they are. They just don't. That's the main thing. The punishment, again, is not so much death, is that they don't get a second chance. And then they get to know that slowly stifling of hope. That is the actual punishment.
I found a couple of really, I'm sorry, I don't remember the names of people who tweeted it out, but a couple of good tweets where somebody had said that, you know, if you support this kind of, you know, justice served on the spot, next time, let's say you're caught speeding, what if the traffic policeman just smashes your windshield? Instead of, you know, doing what he's supposed to.
So then again, that's again a problem with, again, not the process, but with the implementation of the process. That's the reason why, you know, effectively, that's what I'm saying, is that we have to follow due process. The process isn't that a cop can smash your car in. That is not the process. So, but that has got nothing to do with the death sentence.
No. So he, I mean, basically, he was arguing the same way, saying that we cannot have a, you know, the... it is again, it comes down to the execution and judiciary and legislature. The fine line we have between them is for a reason. Same way, we can't have the cops also, you know.
Exactly. There's no way that the cops should be administering justice. In this case, the cops were not administering justice. They were making people forget what they did.
Covering up their
inadequacy. Yes. It's so obvious. I mean, at least in the case of the 2012 Delhi incident, at least I don't think that anybody said that the police did something which
except
was
except incompetence in during right. during the investigation, which is par for the course.
Yes, it might have been, but otherwise, in terms of response, I don't think anybody said that there was anything egregious that the police could have done. But in this case, he was alive when they went to the station, and in that vicinity.
The weird thing is, did you see the number of celebrities who came out applauding this?
Yeah, celebrities nowadays have PR teams, right? It's not a celebrity. Their PR will, you know, call each other and say, what do we need to do in order to get into this? Times of India will make a collection, or, you know, Hindustan Times.
And they gauge the public pulse and kind of get onto the train.
Yeah, so they gauge whatever is going on in the public pulse. And again, it's not them. They might not even know that this was tweeted out from their account.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was...
Absolutely.
It was... I remember there was this guy I used to know who... used to run one of the celebrities' Twitter accounts, and so he was the person who used to, of course, tweet from the celebrity's account. And one day he found a nonsensical tweet, and that was the time that the celebrity had actually logged into tweet. So he was like, "What? Where did? Why? Who?" And it was actually the celebrity who had logged in after months to tweet, and that was himself. That was him. So
that wasn't the nephew.
Yes, exactly. Suresh Raina's nephew. So the problem is that with celebrities nowadays, you know, they've all have teams of PR professionals, and, you know, all their Twitter accounts are mostly handled by them. I don't think they even know what is being said in their name. But yeah, that's you know, of course, a celebrity will jump onto this to do Kareen in the. And it depends on. I mean. That's why I kind of like, there are some celebrities whose politics I might not agree with, but at least I know that it's their own opinions.
Absolutely.
But there are some celebrities who just sway with the wind, you know.
Anyway, I guess is that pretty much our episode for today?
That's pretty much our episode for today. Yes, thanks a lot for everyone. It's and very, very dark, depressing kind of, you know.
What a sharp contrast to last week's episode.
Yes, but... You know, these things need to be said, and I needed to, you know, some time to explain to people, you know, what I feel about the death penalty, and I might not be logically consistent sometimes, in the sense that, you know, whenever it's these actions, I also feel that, you know, there should not be any due process, just catch the guy and string him up from the nearest lamppost. But I know that that's wrong, that is not the way that things should work, and I don't endorse it.
I'll tell you something. Of course, the news came in, you know, before it was reported, the news came in Hyderabad, it was, you know, through WhatsApp groups and all that. My first reaction was, yes. my first reaction was, yes, I'm glad they did that. It took me about 15 minutes for my, the logical part of my brain or conditioning or whatever you choose to call it, to kick in and saying, hold on, no, what's happened is not good. But my first visceral reaction was, yes, I'm glad those guys are dead.
And that happens because of empathy. That happens because we empathize with the victim, all of us. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, as a logically justifiable position, it's just not logically justifiable. And if you do that, at that point of time, you have to say, okay, stone pelting is also okay. Gandhians with guns are also okay. Everybody has a story. There are two sides to the story. And violence is the way that So you can always use that to justify what you like and use it to not justify what you don't like. In order for us to stick to logically consistent principles, which is again one of the mantras of this podcast in general, is that I might be biased in some things, but at least my attempt, and I might not be successful always, is to apply a logically consistent set of principles to my worldview. And for me, that is liberalism. Liberalism means the ability to apply principles irrespective of, with recognition of your own prejudices. Of course, you have your own prejudices. Nobody's perfect. And, not essentially warping the logic when it suits you and then doing the other side when it does not suit. That for me is hardly liberalism.
Well, until then, all I can hope for selfishly is that, at least in India, that I'm part of the mob and not at the receiving end at any time.
Again, I think the problem is, and we've said this in multiple episodes when the cow lynching was going on, that the problem is it's not a BJP Congress thing. It's just that the system does not work. That's the real problem, which is why, because we empathize. Many of us empathize with what happened. We empathize with the victim here. We don't empathize with a cow. Not a lot of us. There are only very few people who... And they end up supporting the lynching because they empathize with the cow because of religious reasons. And many of us who don't empathize with the cow don't. But for a logically consistent reasoning, we have to condemn both. So
yep,
that is the principle of liberalism, that you have to condemn both and say, no, it is just wrong to do this. It's not a question of the cause I support it's not a question of that. It's a question of, is this right or is this wrong? And for me, the law, it might be screwed up. You might expect more from it, and that's perfectly fine. But ultimately, we have to obey the law. We have to go through due process. And in the case of India, we have a death penalty, which I fully support. Because I think that the due process will bring us to the death penalty. I have a problem if the due process itself says that there is no death penalty, as it's there in most countries. I think that I believe, and I gave my logic for that, I think will not work in a country like India.
Okay. And if you want to continue our